coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it into points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, what it do? Win leaves, catch out.
Hey, we got the debut of our shiny new video. Welcome to the Turn 2 podcast. We are doing this live on Wednesday at noon Eastern time. I'm your host, Matt Williams. You can find me on Twitter at MATTWI77IMS. We have an awesome show for you today, everybody. Joining me as always is Mr. Brian Seymour, but we also have a couple of special guests. But Brian, what is up, buddy?
Doing good. Excited for the show. Excited for our special guests. We're kind of spread across the world today, so I'm feeling pretty good about that, and excited to talk about the NL East, my man. So let's do it.
We're going to talk about the National League East. We're going to go series now, division by division. We're going to talk about underrated, overrated hitters, underrated, overrated pitchers, our favorite late round values, all that kind of good stuff that's going to help you win your leagues. Without further ado, our guests representing the NL East. Of course, I will be representing the Mets. Brian doesn't have an allegiance in this division, but Chris Clegg.
What's up, guys?
The Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Got my World Series flag back here, you know, loud and proud. So that's you know, first time since 95. So this is like the first team championship I've had of like any team that I've pulled for in my life. So it's, you know, feels pretty good.
Atlanta's when is Freddie Freeman coming back? When's Freddie Freeman getting some?
I don't know. I'm so nervous.
I was going to go with underrated, but I don't know if he'll be in the division.
I know.
All right. And also joining us from across the pond, Mr. Pete Pratt himself, representing the Marlins over in the UK. What is up, Pete?
How are we doing, guys? Great to be on. Looking forward to this one. I love that there's already some Atlanta Braves shots being fired. Some Freddie Freeman talk. Absolutely loving it. It's going to be a lot of Marlins talk from my side, no doubt about it. So
there's going to be a lot of Marlins talk today. Yeah, I'm excited for the Marlins talk. Yeah.
All right. So let's just get started. We're going to go pretty much one at a time. We'll start with our guests, though. Give them the run of the floor because me and Brian tend to ramble on. Underrated hitter. This is from a fantasy perspective, everyone. So we don't necessarily care about defense unless it's going to keep a player off the field because they're that bad. But let's just start with you, Chris. Underrated hitter in the National League East from a fantasy perspective. Who do you think is the most underrated hitter?
I'm going with sticking with your Mets and going with Pete Alonso. I'm just so confused as why his ADP is where it is. You know, I pulled the NFBC Draft Champions ADP and he's going at pick 66.8. That's so low for a hitter of his caliber and what we know that he can do. I mean, you basically at this point know who Pete Alonso is. He's going to be a 260 type hitter and he's going to provide 35 to 40 home runs and potential for even more. It just seems silly for him to be going so much lower than like a Matt Olson per se. And I know Olson had the big year contact gains, but Alonso just does it so well and so quietly, I guess. And, you know, there's nothing in the profile that tells me there's going to be any kind of regression coming. And, you know, last year, 262 average, 37 bombs, even chipped in a couple steals. It just seems like this is going to be who he is. And based on like SGP value, he's ranked as my 25th player. And so going at pick 60, near pick 67 is just really good value. So if he continues to stick there, even if he goes near pick 50, I'm going to have a lot of Pete Alonso as my first baseman because I think he's being criminally undervalued.
The Zips projections that are out, I believe they have him projected to hit over 50, which usually projections are rather conservative. Wow. So they have him hitting 50 home runs. So you have no argument from me. Usually people like to say that drafting a guy like Alonso or Abreu or even Olson at times in the past couple of years has been a misuse of funds. But I'm one of those people that think like shortstop, everyone says it's so deep, or I don't think it's deep. I think it's top heavy, where if you don't jump early, it kind of gets bad late. And I think first base is the kind of the same way. So I don't really have a disagreement there. I think the kind of I think people give him not enough credit for how much batting average he can give you. He doesn't murder you the way a Joey Gallo does or anything. So I don't know, Brian, do you have a difference of opinion of Pete Alonso?
I agree with Chris actually here. And I was just listening to Justin Mason and Dave McDonald this morning, actually. And they, I think Justin was going the opposite way, saying that he thought Alonso was being overdrafted. You can get a lot of power late, which I totally agree with. Like, power, we all know, is the thing that you can get later in these drafts. But no, I agree with you, Chris, because for me, especially a lot of the drafts we're seeing right now on this ADP is NFBC draft champions. Pete Alonso plays, Pete Alonso stays on the field. I find all of those attributes very attractive. And I agree, yeah, you got Joey Votto later on and stuff like that. But a little known thing, and I'm, I think, 7 or 8 drafts in right now, first base gets abhorrent eventually. Like, that you can't find anything eventually. So I don't mind getting one of them early. And I'm with you. Yeah, I like where Alonso's going, actually.
What about you, Pete? I know you like bombs down there in Miami. Are you a big fan of Pete Alonso?
I am actually. I definitely like the landing spot around 65 or whatever we're talking about right now. Like, I think that's nice value for Alonso, and it probably is underrated there. A few years back, everyone was absolutely going bananas for Pete. He had a little bit of a regression, I think, in the shortened season. And, you know, I really like the spot there. You're right. First base is really interesting. The Marlins have got so many first basemen. We've got 3 of them. We don't know what to do with. So, you know, maybe if you're struggling for one, listen in. I may have a first baseman for you. But I like Alonso. I like the Mets in general. I think they're primed for finally a proper big run this year in 22. So I'm excited.
At least yep. It should be fun. I was hoping someone would take an opposite stance, like Mountcastle, Walsh. Like, do you think that they're worth it later? But, you know, there's risk there, obviously. And now they're trying to go out of their way to screw the Orioles hitters. We should have brought this up. Moving the fences back 30 feet, and everyone's like, oh, some people don't realize how far that is. I mean, just think about it. 410-foot home run now needs to be 440. Not that that's
and the wall is higher, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. That's not what the dimensions are. I'm just trying to paint the picture of how far that is in your head. Yeah. And how much higher? 5 feet higher?
I think 5 feet higher.
Yeah. I think it's 12. From 7 to 12.
You're getting rid of the over the fence catches. That's just so sad. But anyway, that's Pete Alonso. I think we're all in agreement, which is interesting that no one disagrees there. But hey, I love Pete Alonso. I think that's a good call. Moving over to our man, Pete. Who is your first man up for as far as an underrated hitter in the NL East?
Well, I like where Chris went, and, you know, he's in that range. We're going way deeper than that. This is beyond underrated. This is so, so deep. It is ridiculous. And actually, I was struggling with two guys. So there was two on the list. One of them's a Marlin, one of them's a Met. And actually, both of them, both of them will benefit with the DH. If the DH rolls in, both of them, for me, will have an uptick. The two guys I'm talking about is Gerrit Cooper from the Marlins and Dom Smith for the Mets. And the one I ended up landing on, because there's other Marlins to come, this couldn't just be Marlins, I went with Dom Smith with the Mets. He is way, way down for me. So I mean, he had a real nice 2020, real nice 2019 in the small kind of sample he had. 2021 was poor, no doubt. But, you know, I think he was too much time in the outfield for Dom. For me, let's see some DH action for him. I think he could have a real nice bounce back. I mean, he's going around, what, 380, 400? I mean, this is ridiculous. Brian's talking about if you need some first base power. I don't know the eligibility. You know, he played most of his time in the outfield. But let's say he does have first base eligibility. I think he will DH most of the time if that is available. But I really like Dom there. And also, I must say, I love Gerrit Cooper as well. Like, he hasn't stayed healthy. That's the problem with Coop. If he is, and the DH, I think, will solve a lot of that, there is an absolute steal there as well as a pure hitter, bombs away hitter. No steals. There's no steals from Cooper Loop, but both those two guys in a similar range, they are way deep underrated dudes for me.
I like Dom. I mean, as a Mets fan, I like him. I think his ADP is dragged down for two reasons, though. One is whether you believe in 2020 or not. I actually don't. I think he's a good hitter. I think he can hit for average, and I think he's more of a doubles hitter. I think the home runs people were hoping for we're never truly going to be there. But the other issue is the playing time. I don't know if the DH even solves it for him. I mean, currently the Mets have Cano. They have McNeil. They have JD Davis. They have Don Smith. Even if they trade one of them, that doesn't solve it completely. You never know. You could see a JD and Dom platoon, which would be badass. But I don't think it's happening. So Yeah, Dom, while right now I think it's too confusing to take him any earlier, I think he's certainly a guy where if he were traded or assured of at bats, people would be willing to take that leap with you as far as talent. What do you think, Chris? Because, yeah, he's got to be one of the most confusing guys to draft, along with JD himself.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that if the playing time's there, then the value is going to be significant here. And we saw him, you know, last after the strong 2020 season, I think he was going near the top 100. So you're getting a huge discount, but I am concerned about the playing time. I'm kind of hopeful that he is traded somewhere because I think there's a lot of value in the bat. And if it's not with the Mets, who have beefed up and gotten anyone and everyone they've wanted, I'd love to see Dom get a chance somewhere else. So that could be interesting. I do like that spot, but it is risky just because of the playing time.
All right. What are your thoughts, Brian? And then afterwards, you can hit us with your underrated hitter.
Yeah, a lot of this is just that I, don't trust the Mets very much. Like not necessarily to make the right or wrong decision, but there's so many bodies there now. And you guys were bringing up like, what if he gets moved or somebody else gets moved? I think Matt, you and I have talked about JD Davis potentially getting moved in the past. I would just like to see maybe just go reverse it and they didn't sign Mark Canha or something like that. But I don't know, just something to free up. And I think you could be right, Pete. I could see them de-aging him for sure. But I don't know. I haven't seen enough from him, really. I don't know that I'm a believer in it. But you are right. I mean, a 385, I hate when people say he's free. But still, yeah, at that point, I mean, you have your entire starting lineup already. So, yeah, I think it's a good guy to take a shot on.
That. What do you guys think about that free thing? I believe in saying he's free because I think if free quotes, I think maybe we need a new word. But I think free meaning he is so far removed from standardized ADP that if you want him, you can have him in every draft and not do anything egregious as far as pulling him. You can take him. If you want him, you can take him. No one's competing with you for him. That's what we might consider. That's my definition of free, at least in a baseball draft, is you have no competition to grab a player, meaning he's free. I don't know if anyone disagrees with that.
I obviously do, but
it's a good assessment.
Well, no, when people say free, I get it. I mean, you got to pay for them, but I guess that's how I say it. People like to, you know, kind of how the word was a value.
Yeah. Really take things literally. I take things literally, Matt. Sorry.
All right. Who's your underrated hitter? Pete Brian.
You're going to love this one. So we're going to go back to the Mets here. So many Mets. I'll be honest with you. I had so many Mets when I was going through this, and then I realized they're free agents and no longer with the Mets that I wanted to use for this. But I got to use an actual Met. And Matt, you might not like this, but I'm going to go with the catcher, James McCann.
Why would I not like this?
We talked about him before, and he was a flat-out splitting time down the stretch last year. So he was pretty putrid last year, couldn't hit at all. So I didn't know where you felt about him at the time, but he is going 324. That's a range where he's in the last 2 weeks. I have this sort of my last 2 weeks of ADP in the NFBC. But a lot of people are taking him as their probably second starting catcher. I think that's fine. I've even been able to get him as like a third guy here or there. But he has to play a lot, in my opinion. I mean, for where he's going, I mean, he's a wizard defensively. They gave him way too much money in typical Mets fashion. So, I mean, the guy has to play. And I just think for where he's going, he's likely to produce better than that just by simply being on the field. It's a solid lineup. So, yeah, I think McCann should probably go above some of the other catchers he's going behind. I would take him over Eric Haas. I would take him over Joey Bart. I'd take him Danny Jansen, Max Stassi, Yachty. Yeah, I think he should be up at least probably a couple rounds further than where he is. So I kind of like where James McCann's going.
I mean, speaking for myself, I agree with you. I have him. Okay. He's actually I've drafted like four DCs. He's my catcher two on two of them. Everyone draft all those guys you said you'd rather have him over. Everyone drafts McCann after them, and I gladly take him. He's like the last of like the starting tier left, and yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm not maybe as excited for anything, but yeah, I think he'll perform better enough to not have the splits he did last year as far as playing time, not lefty righty. So yeah, I'm fine with McCann. I think that I think he's a fine person, especially if you want to wait on a second catcher. He's got to be one of the best last taken catchers in several years in two catcher leagues, in my opinion. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's being highly undervalued, especially when we think about the two catcher context. It's easy as an SP2 or not SP2, a catcher two, obviously not a starting pitcher, but I think people are just discounting him too much based on last season. And you look back and that's not who he's been. So I think that's a huge outlier. He's just 31 years old. So I expect a bounce back. And I think that he's going to provide really solid value. And Steamer surprisingly hates him. Like Steamer's projections are terrible on him, which I think is probably helping his value stay or his draft value stay a little bit lower. So that's being right. helpful. And he's going to outperform that. There's no question in my mind.
Any thoughts on Mr. McCann, Pete?
I don't like McCann. I don't like anything about him, to be honest with you. And I actually prefer Jacob Stallings in that range. Like he goes a little bit later, but I prefer Stallings.
Wait, you prefer a Marlin? No way.
Well, I do. I'm with you though on that name. That name is coupled with McCann for me. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I definitely prefer. But in this range, like if it's your second catcher, I've got no problems with these dudes. Like in this range, this is completely fine, and actually is probably a nice value pick. Both those guys we've just mentioned. So yeah, I don't like McCann in general, but you know, for fantasy perspective in this range, I'm okay with it.
All right, and then to finish out this, my underrated hitter is Dansby Swanson of the Braves. So maybe make Chris pretty happy. Well, Acuna, if he misses any time, Dansby's at the top of the lineup, so that's great. Don't know how long that'll last or even if it'll happen, period. Maybe Acuna will be ready to go. He looks good so far in his rehab. I don't know why he's drafted so late. I think him and Willy Adames are kind of like neck and neck in that last of the shortstops I'm happy taking. I know I said it's top-heavy, but I'm fine having these guys as my starter. 248, 27 home runs, 9 stolen bases. I mean, it's a career high for home runs, but again, he did have 653 plate appearances. His previous high was 545. Nothing out of the ordinary. Barrel rate, 11.4, same as the previous season. His batting average was down a tick, but again, all of his expected stats kind of lined up. But everything that he did is good. I like all of his elevation rates, his standard deviation of launch angle. Anyone who listens to the show, you kind of understand that now, but it's basically measures your bat control. You want that as tight as possible. Pretty much anything under like 28 is like very good. Anything under 30 is acceptable. He comes in at 27.3 degrees. He's a little bit of a swing and miss guy, but he doesn't chase much. His chase rate, his O swing is actually like well below league average. You know, he just likes to swing for the fence a bit, but 25%, 25.6 last year strikeout rate. I think that's perfectly fine. He early in his career is like in the 22s, but if he's going to be hunting this kind of power, 27 home runs, which maybe is a little high. I think, you know, 20 to 25 is probably where I'd bank him, around the 25 area. But again, if you're going to get double digit stolen bases as well, I love it. So as an overall player, he's probably closer to a league average person when you add up everything he does. But for fantasy baseball, you can get 25 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and an average you can live with. Yeah. Love Dansby Swanson. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah. I don't feel as strong as maybe like underrated or underdrafted. I think he's pretty much going to the in an appropriate price, but I do like him. And I didn't even think about the fact that he could lead off for the month of April, maybe into May, even though like every single Acuna update video, people think he should be like a top five pick again or something like that. I don't know what you think, Chris, but I actually have a couple Swansons already. So yeah, I like it and I'm with you too. Yeah. That Adames Swanson tier, I'm a big fan of, because so many people are grabbing those like top elite shortstops, but these guys are going to produce. So yeah, I like it.
Good question. I guess, Brian, you can hit this if you want. I'll throw it over to Chris for a second too. I love Swanson for this reason too. He's usually pretty healthy. People are grabbing Seager, Correa much earlier. We know what they can do at their peak. It's not, you know, it's way above Dansby, but they're not running at all. And they do have injury history. Seager, maybe fluky stuff at times, but still, they have that in their back pocket. You have to possibly worry about. They're being drafted way earlier. Steal zero. 10 stolen bases is a big deal. So I know that's kind of where at least my underrated comes from. Everyone, you know, feel free to disagree, but yeah, I just think people, they don't see like a 15 or 20 stolen base number. Sometimes you discount people. I mean, even 5 is a big deal, but yeah, if you're stealing double digits, you get a big bump from me.
Yeah, no, I agree with this, because the fact that this is who he's really been the last 3 years, and we saw him start to break out in 2019 before he had the injury right around the All-Star break. I mean, you look at the numbers that he posted in 2019, 17 home runs and 10 stolen bases. He was almost there by the All-Star break, and then he missed a lot of time. He came back in September, and he slumped down the stretch. And then you look last year, he played to that level. And then or in 2020, excuse me, he played to that level over the shortened season. Then 2021, obviously we saw the 27-9. Those are really good numbers. I think the batting average concerns people, but I do think there's a chance that we can see him hit for a higher average, not a super high average, but maybe like a 260 type based on the metrics you were talking about, like his contact rates. He doesn't chase that often. So I definitely think there's plenty of upside here, and he stays healthy, like you mentioned, that other shortstops don't. So I'm in agreement. I want one of Swanson or Adames in a lot of drafts.
Yeah, they're interchangeable for me. I love them both. Pete, Mr. Swanson, your thoughts?
One thing we haven't mentioned about Dansby, contract year, expiring deal. What does that mean? I mean, stats are going to be pumped. He is going to be all in to deliver some serious numbers. So I'm all in on Swanson here. To be honest, the ADP, I think it's kind of pushed up by the fact that, as you mentioned, him and Adames, like, they're right at the bottom end of, like, the shortstop options. Like, the drop-off feels big after them. So I think that does pump their numbers up, like, the ADP-wise. But for Swanson, like you said, the health's good. Contract situation's good. If Acuna's back, you know, at some stage. But if he isn't and Swanson's leading off, I think that all helps. Contract year, I've got no problems at all with Swanson here at, you know, 1-2, 1-2-5, that kind of range. I think he is underrated. I'd probably have him higher than that if I'm completely honest. So, yeah, all good for me.
All right, that does it for underrated. Now it's for a little bit of bad news. Overrated hitters, starting with you, Pete. We'll stick with you. Who is your most overrated hitter? I'll say the person you brought up here before we mention him, he came to mind for me, but then I backed off just because from a fantasy perspective, you know, he just delivers. But I'll let you take it from here. Who's your overrated hitter in this division, at least?
Yeah, so we're sticking with those Bravos. So, you know, Chris may fall off his chair here, I don't know, but and it's the middle infield partner. But Ozzie Albies is my overrated hitter. And as Matt mentioned, like the numbers are good. There's no doubt that the numbers were good. And it was when I looked, it was a sneaky 30-20 year in 2021. Like, I didn't even realize that, but he's going like top 20 pick overall, Albies. Here's why for me, and it's purely the hangover is real. The hangover is going to be absolutely real for these Braves for me. Like, there's going to be a bit of a drop off. I'm not sure. There's so many holes in this team. What's happening with Freddie Freeman? What's happening with this outfield? I think this all plays in. What's happening with Acuna? So many question marks with these Bravos. I do feel like Albies has, I don't know, it feels it's an inflated number for me. A top 20 pick just feels too steep a price for me. I'm just not convinced that that's the right landing spot for him. Top 50, I'm okay, clearly, maybe top 40, but it's maybe two rounds too early for me for Albies, what I'm comfortable with. So maybe others won't see it that way. You do get the power, you do get the speed, clearly, you know, hence why he's in that range. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of factors that are going against Albies this year, just in the general Braves lineup situation. So yeah, there we go. Ozzie Albies.
I have thoughts, but I'm going to let Chris defend his dude right here first. Chris, take it away.
I guess I see the argument. I see mixed opinions on Albies from the standpoint of, well, that you're buying him at peak value, which I don't necessarily disagree with. And in this year, we're seeing second base a little bit deeper. Like in the past, like second base is so shallow, but this year you've added Trey Turner, you've added Javi Baez, you added a couple more, like Marcus Semien as well. So there's some good players that have added second base eligibility. I just think that this is a true four-category stud with potential for better batting average. I'm not expecting 30 home runs, 20 steals again, but I think 25-15 with 100 runs and RBIs is reasonable with a decent average. So, you know, maybe he's slightly overvalued at where he's going, but I don't think he's that overvalued. I think I'd take him around like pick maybe 15-20, which is probably in the range where you're going to get him most drafts.
This is why I said I almost had him as my player, but then I didn't have to because Pete took him. I agree with both of you where I think I see flaws, but I agree with Chris because I think even if you get a disappointing year, you're not going to actually be disappointed where you took him. It may end up not being the complete return on investment you were hoping for, but I think that his likely floor in a rotisserie format is still going to return more than enough where you'll be happy. Plus, I don't actually like second base a ton. It's not like shortstop for me. I like a few guys specifically. There's a few guys I'm avoiding. And then later, there's just this mishmash of people. So I think like middle infield is deep, but second base, I kind of would like to get one of the top guys personally. I mean, Albies is coming off the worst chase rate of his entire career, the worst end zone contact rate of his entire career, and the worst swing strike rate of his entire career. Maybe that's by design to get more power. We'll see. That you know, that would be completely fine. You know, there's trade-offs to get certain things done. So yeah, I think that we're not seeing last year, but yeah, you don't necessarily have to. So I'm fine. I'm probably not going to be drafting him in the second round this year. But I don't think it's enough to call him overrated, in my opinion. What do you think, Brian?
I agree with Pete here and you, Matt. I don't know that I wouldn't maybe use the term overrated, but if we're saying overdrafted, yeah, I probably would say that. And it's because, number one, I don't think he's probably going to repeat what he did last year, but you know, this guy has had issues hitting right-handed pitching, which, I mean, the last time I checked, that's the majority of pitchers.
he everyone except Chipper Jones and Mickey Mantle need to stop hitting switch hitting. It's just always a bad idea. Yep. It's just the worst.
Yeah. And I have some concerns. I mean, he hasn't really had many years and I do like him. Like this isn't like some big drop off. Totally agree with what Pete said, like top 40, top 45. Yeah, totally agree with. But, you know, he hasn't had many years of an OBP far over 300. It is concerning. And it's not like he has crazy batting averages. I mean, I just feel like, I don't want to compare him to like Whit Merrifield. In no way am I saying he's like that, but a guy like Whit Merrifield, who's also going kind of around the same range, also second base eligible. I feel like with a couple small tweaks, I could be losing a couple rounds of value. Like all of a sudden, you know, if they're in a rut or not hitting very well, I'd be concerned of what I'm going to get from them. So yeah, I feel the same way and I'd be fine with him more like, you know, late third, early fourth round or something like that with Albies.
In 2021, he batted .259 with 30 home runs, 103 runs, 106 RBIs, and 20 stolen bases. In 2018, he hit .261, 24 home runs, 105 runs, 72 RBIs, and 14 stolen bases. I think give him 20 more RBIs, and that's Ozzy Albies. About .260, 24, 105, 114. I think that's pretty good. If you, it's a tick under what it was, and it's a tick under his projections, but still very good. That's what I think we got. Chris, this is a speed round, I guess, because you're going to give us your overrated hitter, and it happens to be Brian's overrated hitter, and it happens to be my overrated hitter. So hit us with your guy, and we'll pretty much three on one versus Pete.
Sorry, Pete. You took a shot at Albies. I'm going to take a shot at Jazz Chisholm.
Oh, boy.
I love Jazz. I do think that Jazz is a fun player to watch. I think the upside here is tremendous. The power speed is really undeniable. But to keep it short and sweet, the chase rates are concerning. The strikeout rate really concerns me. And I fear that there's a lot of bust potential here. You know, I do think, obviously, the power speed is the reason he's being drafted where he is. There's really no question about that. But there's a high ground ball rate, not a great fly ball rate, at least last season. And the strikeout numbers just really scare me. He could hover around the 30%. And if that's the case, he strikes out too much. I just don't see him really producing the home run and stolen base totals that we think that he will. So for that reason, I think he's being overdrafted, and I think he's going to not return value where he's being picked.
All right, Pete, get him. Get him, Pete.
Yeah, let's hear it, Pete.
Are you talking?
Shocking analysis. I mean, myself and Matt had a full-blown discussion about Jazz, just for Christmas Day conversation, Matt,
yeah,
right?
Christmas Day breakdown of Jazz.
Yeah, we had a full rundown on that. I got to be honest, I don't disagree that Jazz, I think Jazz is overrated in fantasy this year. I think, like, ADP-wise, he is being overdrafted, overrated. He's too high with the amount of red flags that are there. Like, The one thing I must say, the speed is absolutely legit. The stolen bases, I think, is actually, I think he's got a higher ceiling than where he landed last year. He obviously missed some time, but the speed is absolutely there. The power is absolutely there, no doubt. The reality is, though, sophomore slump is real. There's other things and other factors that are real. So there's some red flags. And for me, Jazz is being taken way, way, way too high. Like, you know, 40 spots too high, probably. Like, he's going about the 70th. I'd see him like a kind of top 120 dude if it was me, if he took the name away. But I think the stolen base allure is absolutely there. Like, there is 30, 35 plus stolen bags, in my opinion, in Jazz if he's fit and running. But yeah, I don't disagree. I hope he doesn't listen to this.
He
probably
think
does.
Actually, Jazz is commenting a couple of things I've done. I don't disagree that he's overrated, but I think he's a tricky player because in fantasy, the power and speed, I understand how tantalizing that could be. If he wasn't going here and he was going as late as you say, then everyone would be calling him underrated because of the ceiling. So it's like, you know what it is? It's either you want to take the risk or you don't. I don't even know if he's being overrated. I consider him overrated enough to not draft him. So I guess that's where I land. And that's why I put him in the camp I did. But yeah, like you said, sophomore slump is coming hard. The speed, like you said, I believe in that completely. He has just so many flaws. Everyone loves to show those home runs off Jacob DeGrom, which is just a beautiful shot, maybe 2 feet above the zone, 100 miles an hour. But that being showcased as his highlight of the year is actually his biggest problem. He's Kit Keller from the League of Their Own. He cannot lay off high fastballs, and the entire league knows it now. He can get around on them sometimes and make you look embarrassed, but most of the time he's not. I mean, we could show the highlight reel of him hitting, connecting on that Jacob DeGrom home run. I've got 45 more of him swinging and missing. So yeah, he needs to be a little more aggressive in the zone. Wait for his pitch when he gets it, especially low and in. You know, he's got that lefty swing. He's got to kind of pick his spots a little more, which he definitely could. If he does, wow. I mean, I wouldn't bet against him exploding, but I wouldn't bet on it this season. So, yeah, is he going Castanheira or, you know, is he going Ozzy Albies? I mean, there's a lot of – or not Ozzy Albies. He's going like Javier Baez. There's a lot of different ways he can go here, and this will be a interesting season. But, yeah, I'd rather go in a different direction personally. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, Javier Baez was an interesting comparison there, I think. Yeah, and Pete, I think you nailed the range. I was looking at the ADP. Yeah, I think more like 110 or something like that, like right around where we, like Dansby Swanson or something like that. For me, you know, we talk a lot about on this podcast about, you know, I do like to cross players off my board if I think that there's too much risk. And that's how I feel about Jazz. I just, you know, I don't know how many games he's going to play. The strikeout profile is high. He's a young, raw player. I want to see, you know, a couple of years of being on the field the entire season and showing kind of like Javier Baez has done, even though he scares me as well to draft, that he has the ability to hit for a low average and strike out a lot and still produce and, you know, not all of a sudden not be able to hit it all and get like sent down or something. So, yeah, there's just way too much risk for me. I can't see myself drafting him at all at that price.
Can I just say one final thing just on this one? I'm just looking here. Mondesi is going 25 picks earlier than Jazz. So,
yeah,
like Jazz is a less risky Mondesi, in my opinion, and has the similar, you know, Mondesi being drafted for the same reasons in some ways that Jazz can offer. Plus, Jazz has tons more power and will stay on the field probably more than Mondesi. So if you compare the two, it's two, three rounds difference in terms of ADP of Mondesi Jazz. I'd absolutely load up on Jazz over Mondesi if that's what I was looking for. So just want to throw that out there.
How dare you make me defend Mondesi? Well, I will say that he can steal as many bases as Jazz is going to hold the year. Probably he can do that in a month. It ain't going to happen though, that's all we really need to say. You said the one thing that only needs to be said is Jazz will be on the field.
There we
so
go.
That's the only thing that matters. Going over to pitching, Chris, name us your underrated pitcher, your most underrated pitcher in the NL East.
Well, I stuck with the Braves. I wanted to take Max Fried, but I decided not to, and I'm actually going with Ian Anderson. It's weird that his value has dropped, like his ADP is like falling for some reason, and he's done nothing but perform. I know last year wasn't great, but we're talking about a young pitcher who's 23 years old that has a great track record so far. And during the 2020 season, even though it was a shortened season, he dominated that postseason. He was solid last year and then looked really good again in the World Series run. I just don't quite understand. We're looking at a career 3.25 ERA and a 1.20 whip, and his pitch mix is really good. There's no denying that. The changeup's an elite pitch. He tunnels it extremely, extremely well with the fastball. It's so hard for hitters to catch up to it when they don't know what's coming. I mean, it plays up so well. And the curveball is a great pitch as well. So you're going with a great three-pitch arsenal. I don't know. I'm just confused here on him falling. I don't think he's like going to be like a huge, like he's not going to vault to like SP1 status. I don't expect that out of Ian Anderson. He does allow some hard contact. He walks too many batters. Like, he has his flaws, but from where he's going, I just think that he's being a little bit undervalued, and I can see him being like a high-end SP3 when he's going like late SP4 range. So yeah, I'm going to bank on that, and I'm going to draft a lot of Ian Anderson this year.
What do you think, Brian? Are you a fan of Ian Anderson?
Yeah, because he was also my guy. So another kind of lightning round here. Yeah, Ian Anderson at 140 over the last couple of weeks in an FBC ADP, I think is too late. Looking at some of the guys going ahead of him, now I like Chris Bassett too, but Shane Boz, no way I'm taking him over Ian Anderson. Let's see here. Eovaldi, I'd rather have Ian Anderson. Carlos Rodon, I'd rather have Ian Anderson. He should be Pablo Lopez, a name I think we might bring up maybe again. I would take Ian Anderson over him. Yeah, I think Ian Anderson should be going just after maybe pick 100 or so. So yeah, I agree. My only concern is I just want to know how many innings we're going to get, because if I'm taking him that early, I do want to get what Steamer's projecting at least, which is about 165. He only went 120 some last year. So I definitely want 165. But yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I think he is underrated, and not quite sure why, I guess. But yeah, I think he should be going more around pick 100 or so.
I think a lot of people have that. He always had that stigma that he had one pitch, the changeup, and it's really good. I think people don't give enough credit to how much it works with the four seam, which had like a negative 12 run value in Savant. I mean, fastballs and changeups, they're meant to live together. And he does such a good job of working them in with the curveball. So yeah, I think it's I think maybe it's just something where people just don't pay enough attention, and that's kind of the write-up on him. And, you know, they just don't realize that once he got to the majors, it's the, you can even see that in the minors though, how much success he was having with the strikeouts. And you just see that he was doing it with this one pitch, and it was early on in his career. I totally get doubting him, but I think he's proven enough now to where he's probably only going to continue to further, you know, kind of define who he is and kind of like fine tune going forward. So I could see another step forward. So I'm with you guys. Although I don't have a share yet, so I don't know what it is. There's a lot of interesting pitchers going around there, and it's a weird spot where you maybe need to grab a catcher finally or grab a reliever. I mean, it's an interesting spot. So I think I don't have them by design, but it's definitely one of those good reasons to maybe wait on pitching this year. There's a lot of people that still like to go pocket aces, but man, I've gone like hitter, and came away with a good staff. So Pete, Ian Anderson, are you a believer?
See, again, this has been a head scratcher for me, Ian Anderson, because the name isn't sexy, but what I must say on the positive side with, you know, it's just a vanilla name, isn't it? So
Ian, but, get out of here.
Ian Anderson, come on. It's like we Brian Anderson.
That's the lead singer of Jethro Tull was Ian Anderson also. One of the most legendary prog rock bands of all time. But
just so I think that I think Ian Anderson's new nickname should be Jethro Tull.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send it in. I tell you what I would say is, you know, in the postseason, the boy, he can't half pitch when the pressure's on. That's what I do like about Ian Anderson. Like, when the heat is on, the guy can absolutely deliver. Having seen him pitch a lot against the Marlins the last couple of seasons, and watch those games in full, it's funny. It's that kind of guy, when you're watching him pitch, you feel like you could get after him. It feels like you should be hitting him, but you're not. It's a weird sensation. I always kind of watch in the games going, I feel like he's there to be got at, but we never do. So
he pumps the zone with fastballs that should be hittable, but then he messes up your timing so much that no one can get comfortable against him.
Yeah.
Like you want to sit fastball, but you can't.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I mean. You're sitting there going, he feels hittable. And I feel like a blow up is absolutely, you know, there to happen, but it never does. And so Ian Anderson, just a head scratcher for me. I don't know where I'm at with him yet. I'm still not. I haven't decided whether I like him or not from a fantasy perspective. But what I must say, when the heat's on, the guy can't half deliver. So that for me is a real nice trait. And I can just see him really kind of taking the next step. It wouldn't shock me if next year we're going, yeah, Ian Anderson, you know, ace of the staff potentially. I mean, who knows?
All right, Pete, sticking with you. What is your underrated pitcher for the NL East?
Oh boy. I mean, you know where I'm going with there's so many underrated pitchers with the Marlins. Absolutely. And I'm going with Edward Cabrera. Edward Cabrera for me, who made his debut back end of last year. And what I want everyone to think of is Trevor Rogers in 2020. That's what I want everyone to think of, is had a little taste of it, 6, 7, 8 starts, a bit like what Eddie Cabrera had. Numbers don't look great. They don't pop off the screen, but you know, they were limit, you know, they were limiting his pitches, etc. And but as he became more comfortable, his last start was his best start for me. You know, it's all trending the right way. What happened to Trevor? Trevor went away in the offseason, came back an absolute stud in 21. And I can see exactly the same thing happen with Eddie Cabrera. There's a massive chance he'll be in the rotation. I think clearly that's the question is, all these arms, who's going to be pitching for the Marlins? The unknown right now is who's still going to be there, because they need to acquire some bats, and big-time bats. And there is a chance that a Pablo Lopez, an Eliezer, a Lizardo, any of them could be traded. That is the unknown right now. But my gut feel is Eddie Cabrera won't be, and he will crack the rotation. And I think he has a sensational season and could be like a top 30, 40 pitcher in the whole of Major League Baseball next year. He's going like, I don't know, 400 or something right now. But Eddie Cabrera,
500.
For me, 500. There you go. Wow. I mean, there you go. Even extra 100 picks. That, I mean, he's free. He's free.
Free, everybody.
There you go. So Eddie Cabrera for me.
Chris, I want to get your take, because you're really into prospects. And I honestly didn't watch much on Cabrera other than video clips in the minor leagues, other than just write-ups of others. I watched him myself in the majors, like any rookie, well, like most rookies, I should say. He did struggle. It looks like he leaves his fastball just in the zone constantly. It's always kind of getting hit around. So I never really got a real sense of what he could do. That'll come with time. So I don't actually have like this very strong opinion on Cabrera, because I you know, you saw some flashes, but then a lot of, wow, this guy should be in the minors right now. Yeah, what do you think with a few steps forward here? Do you think he can make a mega jump this season?
I do, because I think he's more talented than Sixto Sanchez, and I've thought that for a while. I think that he's just been the more talented arm, obviously the strikeout potential being a huge upside. We didn't see that in the majors. And it was interesting to see his regression last year with walks. I mean, yeah, he had short stints everywhere, but he pitched fine in AA. But then AAA, we saw the walk rate take a huge regression back to 14.7% and then 15.8% in the majors. And so I don't know if he's trying to get too fancy and just missing the zone too much, but the talent's there. The arsenal's elite. I mean, the fastball is legit. He pumps at high 90s consistently. The slider is really good, and the changeup's developing. I think that's the biggest thing that will keep him as a starter, is the developing changeup. And what's the thing that the Marlins do the best with their pitchers is develop changeups. We've seen it time and time again. So I really believe in that. And I think the command will probably be the biggest thing with Cabrera. And I think he's capable of taking that step. You know, he's still young. We've seen the flashes. He's just got to do it more consistently. So no, I like the pick. And I think if he's in the rotation, which I think he should be, and you know, worst case, he's going to be in the rotation at some point next year for a good while, then he's a great pick.
Brian, is he someone that you're looking into in the late rounds? His last three starts last year, he only had 4 innings, 3 innings, 3 innings, 19 strikeouts in those three games to 9 walks. So, I mean, yeah, we know that he can put on the pain against opposing hitters. It's just a matter of, Pete mentioned the real problem is, will he pitch? Right now they should and probably should trade somebody. But, with the way Sixto, they say that he's not following his offseason program. We don't know if he'll be available. We'll get into Pablo in a little bit. So, if everything stays in place, he just has a playing time issue. But let's assume that's out of the way. How do you feel just about his talent?
Well, yeah, if that was out of the way, I mean, obviously, I think he shoots up 200 picks, probably. I think with where he's going right now, and again, yeah, the thing is, like you said, innings is the concern. So just the way that I like to do things right now is I'm really looking at innings if I'm back at this point, which you can find. I mean, like there are some innings even going far behind where Edward Cabrera is. So I do think you guys bring up good points. I mean, even though the Marlins have turned into this Guardians level pitching depth organization, half them are hurt. So, I mean, I think that Edward Cabrera is probably going to be in the rotation. I mean, I don't know how many starts you peg him for. I mean, I could see him at least maybe half a season or so. Sixto's already, I mean, I don't even know if he'll pitch this year. And then in terms of, again, a guy we're going to talk about here shortly, I think he'll be out of the rotation at some point. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I really value innings at that point. But, yeah, talent-wise, sure. I mean, and what the Marlins are doing, it would be all systems go. I just don't know. There's too much of a question mark on the innings for me. But, yeah, I like the pick from Pete for sure.
All right, the last pitcher we're going to talk about is my underrated pitcher, which Chris says that he wanted to mention, but I just had to. He's going early, so maybe this will seem like silly to the audience. Max Fried of the Braves. Last year, I banged the drum on Max Fried being overrated only by comparison to Zach Wheeler, because I thought Zach Wheeler was a less expensive version of Fried, who I thought would get more strikeouts. Exactly that happened. Boom. Zach Wheeler had his monster season. This year, I'm comparing Fried to Alcantara, however you want to say his name. I've heard it both ways. They're the same pitcher, kind of. They're basically the same pitcher. Fried had a little bit of an injury this year. I don't, you know, that won't be an injury going forward. The whole thing with Sandy is, you know, he's going to throw 200 innings. I expect him to throw a little more innings than Fried, but overall, they both have the same plus. They both have the same minuses. They, you know, 6-4-3 equals two is tattooed on Sandy. He likes to go for double plays. Max Fried likes to go for ground balls too, because he's really good at generating weak contact. The thing that people get on Fried for is that they think that he doesn't have the ability to get strikeouts, which is completely wrong. He definitely has the ability. He has incredible ability to get strikeouts. He just doesn't, because he has also the great ability to generate weak contact. We saw it during his like crazy second half last year. He is one of the best pitchers in baseball, definitely a Cy Young worthy person in a full season. He can get the strikeouts. It's definitely there. This isn't a guess. It's there. It's just a matter of, will it come out? If it does, you're looking at possibly like a second round pitcher. That's how good he can be. I'm not saying to expect that, but right now, whereas Sandy, who I'm not telling you not to pick, love him, go ahead and draft him. He's great too. You can get Fried like four rounds later, five rounds later. And I expect very, very similar results. So not that he is being taken in a bad spot. I love it. But yeah, I'm certainly willing to jump the gun and grab him on most of my teams. I love Max Fried. What do you think, fellow Braves fan over here? Let's go with Chris. You could talk about some Fried.
Well, I don't have much to add to what you said. I think that the comparison to Alcantara is something that I've had in my mind as well. They're very similar pitchers. They're going to have similar strikeout rates. I think the biggest knock on Fried is just the innings, which I think he's going to get there. I think with the postseason, he threw like 192 last year. So there's no reason he can't be a 200 inning guy next year. Plus you have to factor in, even if he is just a strikeout per inning type guy, that's 200 Ks, 200 innings, elite ratios. And I think he takes the step forward. You look at the arsenal and there's a great chance that if he wants to, he can see that strikeout rate tick up. I think he could settle in the 27-28% range. I think you mentioned that he likes pitching to that weak contact. So if he wants to, it's more than there. And I think that he just gets totally undervalued. And at the price range, it's an easy pick with him over Sandy, given the round difference that they're going. So yeah, I love that.
Let's go over to the Sandy guy. Let's go over to Pete. What do you think of Fried? Again, not an attack on Sandy. We see a little bit of a discount Sandy here.
I loved Fried going into last year. I actually took a bunch of Fried, I think, even last year. I liked him then. I liked he had a bit of a wobble at the start of the year. Remember, he was a little bit off. And then the second half of the year, just sensational. You're right. The same dudes. The difference was that Sandy, a few more innings and a few more Ks. Like Sandy really turned it on as well in the back end. So once the All-Star break was out of the way and he wasn't the All-Star, that flipped a switch in Sandy's mind. It was like, hey, Trevor Rogers is not the ace. I am. Sandy went bananas. You're right. They're the same dudes. The problem, the problem you've got is, do the Ks show up for either of them? And that, kind of looking at Sandy, I'm not convinced the Ks are totally sustainable, because he loves a ground ball too. So they're very similar. Fried, you've got what, three rounds worth of difference? Is it three? Give or take three, four rounds.
I think it's four plus sometimes.
Four plus. I mean, wow, it's a wide.
Right now, at least. Again, it's different industry leagues versus home leagues versus, you know, points, rotisserie. It depends on your settings. But in my last three, Sandy has gone in the second round in 15-team leagues. So that's very high.
That's very high, by the way, for Sandy, I think, like personally. And as a Marlins, I absolutely love Sandy, but he could absolutely just go back to ground ball machine in a flash, and there's no Ks. And, the innings will be there for sure, health permitting. But I love the value of Fried there for sure. They're the same dude. Basically, they really are.
Brian, you have any difference of opinion there on Mr. Fried?
No, I agree with you. The funny thing is, just because he is going 71, is how high does he go? And I'm just looking at the pitchers here. And actually, to answer your question, for the last couple of weeks with NFBC ADP, Alcantara's been going 39th, Freed 71. So the gap is actually tightening just a bit there. I don't know if it, I think it's more maybe Sandy falling back a bit here, but where, how high do you go with Freed? I mean, Freed or Robbie Ray?
Freed.
Freed.
Okay. Freed or Lucas Giolito?
Giolito.
I'll take Freed.
I like Lucas, what he did. I love Freed. It's just, I think Giolito definitely has like lead the league in strikeouts potential.
That's fair.
Right. So I couldn't not do that. But yeah, Freed, I think, is safer. That makes
I think sense. I know the answer. I'll ask you one more. I think I know the answer, but Freed or Aaron Nola?
Freed.
Nola.
Okay. 100%.
I'm Freed. A Nola guy.
I
didn't
know the answer. What is he? The three, was it 337? XERA, FIP, XFIP, and CR, something crazy. Yep. It's like identical. It's nuts. The only thing, and I like Nola. I love him for a bounce back. Cannot find a reason that makes sense of why that home run rate was what it was. I know good pitchers give up home runs. Verlander gives up home runs. Scherzer gives up home runs. Good pitchers that like to live with their stuff in the zone give up home runs, but he gave up so many, and I actually can't find a reason to shy it away. So while I agree it's a good value, and I'll certainly have shares of him this year, I don't know. I mean, it looks like you can just say, oh, regression, it'll go back to normal. I'm like, I can't find a reason why it will. And that bugs me a little. So I love Nola. And all the backup numbers Chris cites when he tweets about him, it's all real. Everything points to him bouncing back. It really does. Maybe this speaks to how much I like Freed. Because I like Freed a lot. But yeah, there's something about Nola. I just sometimes if I can't explain it, I'll just get rid of it. And I don't know about Nola. It's a little weird for me. I mean, usually there's something to explain this stuff away. And he just bad location. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, he can fix it easy. And be a Cy Young candidate, easy. I just can't find an exact reason to make me feel good about it. I don't know if anyone disagrees with that particular thing. I mean, either you just think like, you know what, he's never done that before. He'll fix it. He's a professional. That's a completely fine way to think about it. But me, I'm all paranoid. So I'm just like.
So basically, just to kind of get it, Matt, are you saying, would you take Freed at the end of round two, beginning of round three?
No. I just wouldn't take Nola. I'd just go another direction. I like Freed going. I'd jump a little before his ADP. I'm not jumping way up. I mean, you can like a guy later. Don't necessarily have to do that. But yeah, like there, I'd like Giolito. If Giolito is gone, I'll go another direction. There's plenty of shortstops, outfielders. If you're on the turn, you can go Hendricks, Hader. There's a lot of ways to go that early. So I just won't be going Nola's way. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All right, where the heck were we before I took over the show with Aaron Orr, diatribe here?
We all went. Yeah, I had Ian Anderson as well as my underrated pitcher. So now we're to the overdrafted pitcher.
Overdrafted. All right, sticking. Let's go to Pete. Overrated. Overdrafted pitcher in the NL East. Who's your guy?
Yeah, and it's not a top 100 pick or ADP right now, but Ranger Suarez for me. I think he's going about 120th. This dude's a middle reliever that just started a few games against some terrible teams at the back end of the year. Like, I mean, his numbers look great, no doubt about it, but he pitched against some absolutely terrible teams. Lineups. Go and look who he pitched against in all those games. Two against the Marlins were stripped to parts. The Orioles, the Pirates, you know, you name it. It was just, you know, tear down after tear down he pitched against. I am not believing anything to do with Ranger Suarez. I think I'm going nowhere near. Honestly, if you put another 100 picks, I still wouldn't take him. I probably wouldn't. Like, I just do not like anything.
He's projected by Steamer to pitch 165 innings, 3.75 ERA with a 22% strikeout rate, 1.31 whip. What's that worth to you? If he did that, would you be disappointed? 3.75 ERA? No,
I think they're way off. These guys are way off.
That's not going to happen. Yeah.
That's not happening. Yeah,
I mean, they do have him down for a 1.31 whip. That's not fun at all, too. So, I mean, I think it's appropriate-ish. I'm with you. I'm not drafting him either. I was just curious what you thought of his projection. That's all.
Yeah, I think the projection's way off for me. I'm not having 165 innings. Like, not a chance in hell. Not a chance. It's not happening. Ranger Suarez, get out of here.
He could. He may be one of those guys. Like, who did they last year where they put a guy in the bullpen or in the middle of the year and then put him back in the rotation at the end?
The Phillies? Oh.
No, someone else in the league. Well, let's forget about it. But I think usually you can add like 50. So that would be, put him at like 156. 165 is not too far off. What do you think, Chris? Ranger Suarez. He pitched against garbage teams, but he was like the best pitcher in baseball during that stretch. So, I mean, you can't be like he pitched against bad teams. I'm throwing this out the window. He like literally was like the best pitcher in baseball. So, I mean, there is that too.
Yeah, I mean, he was a Jacob deGrom replacement, as Phil DeSoto has said on his team. He was that good. I just have trouble feeling like he's going to be able to repeat that. Like, I just don't think he can do it. John L. had a great video about him. It was very compelling. It made me really think, like, is Ranger Suarez worth it? Like, I really enjoyed that breakdown of him. But I don't know. I struggle with the price tag. I think the price tag is a little too high. I'm willing to take the risk later, but not where he's going right now.
If he delivered that steamer projection, do you think his ADP is worth it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close at least. I think he's, with the projection, I think he's probably like a top 175 player. So it's close. I think his DC ADP was 157. So it could have gone up in the last few weeks. But
okay. Brian, your thoughts?
I'm glad you just left off on that, Chris. I was just looking. So the last 2 to 3 weeks, he's actually going 170 now. So he's actually falling, which is interesting. It's like the market's correcting itself based on what our thoughts are here. And Pete, I just went and took a look. You said like you don't even know if you take him 100 picks later. I would be looking at like 200 picks later when I actually look at ADP. I think like in the 350 range is where I'd start to feel comfortable, because just playing it simple, there are guys going back there that have a longer track record of turning in 175 innings. And I don't know that Suarez is going to he's not going to pitch 165 innings. I don't think that's going to happen. But there's just not a track record. So yeah, I'm not interested in that at all. I'm curious to see if the free fall with him will continue, because it seems like maybe, I don't know if just more people getting into the market and getting into drafts or sharper players. I'm not sure what it is, but I bet we do continue to see that to fall. But yeah, I am in agreement here. I think that was a great pick for an overrated pitcher this year.
Who would everyone rather have, Ranger Suarez or Zach Plesac?
Plesac.
Neither.
It's not a question for me.
Neither, yeah.
You got to take one of them.
No, Plesac. I guess he's going to pitch innings. So.
Well, here, I think Plesac will give you innings, and his whip will probably be within reason. We don't know how the rest of it will go. I think it's an interesting decision to make. All right, moving on. Chris, your overrated pitcher for the NL East.
My pick is not because of a talent level. It's because of innings and injury concerns. It's Pablo Lopez. And there's no denying Lopez is a stud when he's on the mound. But just look at his inning totals. I mean, you look over the last several years since 2018, 119, 125 in 2019. Obviously, the shortened season, 57. So he pitched a full year then. But then last year, just 102. And he's had a shoulder injury every full season since 2018. So minus 2020, he's had a shoulder injury in 2018, 2019, and 2021. So I just can't take that risk where he's going, despite the fact that he's a great pitcher. And if he stays healthy, he's certainly going to return value, but I'm not willing to take the risk there that he doesn't stay healthy and pitches 100 innings again, because you're not getting the value there, in my opinion.
This hurts. I love Pablo Lopez.
I do too. So
we all do, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Where would you feel comfortable taking him, Brian? I mean, does anyone disagree with this? Even Pete?
No, you can't disagree, right? You just can't. So I think it's a fair assessment.
I mean, there's some people that just cross off players with injuries. Is this a guy that you'd be interested at a certain discount, or is this a guy you're just worried about, therefore you're not drafting him, Brian?
Chris and I are in lockstep, because this was my overdrafted and overrated, because I agree. I absolutely love Pablo Lopez. Everybody has the same sentiment here, but the way that I do things, yeah, I cross him off my board. And honestly, I feel bad. I regret kind of what I did last year. I had so much Pablo Lopez last year. He was good, and I love watching him pitch. But I should have realized what you just said, Chris. I mean, like, the data was there on his shoulder. I mean, it's been something that was there every single year. And this is going to be the year, I think, where we really see a limitation of the innings. So him going at 123, which is about, if I recall, 30-ish picks later than what he was going last year. Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of doing this on the fly, looking at ADP, but I feel like I would have to drop him again. I'm not going to, I crossed him off, but I think he has to be back maybe at 220-ish or so. Yeah, 250, something like that. I think that would be more reasonable, but I am very worried about Pablo, unfortunately, too.
Eric Cross, everyone, over at Fantrax with the same podcast as Chris Clegg here. He said that he was in a league where Pablo Lopez dropped to pick 192. Is anyone taking him there? Because I am.
Yeah, that's fair. I have him valued around pick 200, so I'm willing to jump in around 192.
I mean, Run DMCD, the doctor of fantasy baseball, he always makes fun of people saying, if you're out on someone for an injury, it shouldn't matter how far they fall. I disagree. I think it depends. I think it depends on the severity of injury, the kind of injury, the kind of upside they can give. I think there are some people you're just out on. But yeah, I think there's definitely a certain point where I'd be in on Lopez. And if he's dropping that far in any, which that's not the norm, folks, don't get your hopes up. I would be willing to take a shot there. You want to pump up your guy, Pablo, Pete? I think we're all kind of lockstep in how we feel about him from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, Petey Pablo.
Maybe we're underselling just how awesome he is when he's healthy.
He is. I mean, he's an absolute stud. I mean, Chris called it out. He is a stud when he's on the mound, and he's just been getting better and better. So the talent is unquestioned. The changeup is just sensational. I mean, like we've already said, the Marlins, they've got some secret special sauce going on with changeup development for sure. Everyone just adds this plus changeup. Pablo is, I guess, the leader of that gang. But, oh boy, these shoulder injuries are a real, real concern. It'd be unfair of me to kind of come in pumping Pablo after I've just dismissed Ranger Suarez saying he's not getting 165 innings. And in reality, I'd probably be shocked if Pablo gets 165 innings as well, based on the history. With that being said, I think around pick 200 to me feels fair. Absolute stud, has all the tools. I must say as well, he's a legitimate trade candidate as well. So I've got to call that out, that absolutely, I think the Marlins could look to do something there and cash in. Maybe. I mean, that the problem is everyone else knows he's got a shoulder problem, right? So I don't know. But yeah, I think at least 100 picks beyond where he's going now, for me, feels fair. And where I'd probably jump in earlier than that, but that's just me because I've got home team bias, but that is what it is.
Hey, let's acknowledge it. We're running a little late, so we're gonna hurry through the next couple. Brian, your overrated pitcher.
Oh, I was with mine was also Pablo Lopez. So, I in lockstep. Yeah.
Okay. The mine is Will Smith, obviously NL East. So I'm talking about the closer. He was fantastic in the postseason. Phil Dussault just drafted him in the fourth round, so you can just call me an idiot. Phil's in on him, so I'm wrong, right? He blew up a ton in the regular season. Teams don't necessarily want a pitcher like that to be their closer. They have other options already. They can certainly bring in someone else to replace him easily. They signed Kirby Yates, who by June could certainly take over the role. It's just that he's just being taken too early. Again, early drafts, not a lot of jobs have been claimed yet. Once that happens, you don't have to pull guys you're uncomfortable with early just because you know they have a job and you can go later. But for anyone in early drafts right now, Kenley Jansen's the last closer I really feel comfortable drafting early, as everyone's like pushing closers up and up, and he didn't have a job yet, but I think, comfortable enough to think he'll close when he does. But Will Smith, he's just going too damn early for me. I think that as great the bullpen for Braves was just so good in the postseason, I think they forget how shaky he was. And I know this because I rostered him quite a bit last year. I'm waiting for him to get his job taken away. So I picked him too because I was trying not to do overlap and you guys picked some of the good ones. So Chris, defend Will Smith.
I don't know if I can. His draft price is getting way too high. And as a Braves fan and watching him every night, you're just on the edge of your seat as he walks the bases loaded and somehow proceeds to get out of the jam. And yeah, I mean, his postseason was stellar. Like, I don't think you could have pitched better than he did throughout the entire postseason. But that's not enough for me to be comfortable drafting him as a closer. Yep, props to Phil for taking him fourth round. His ADP is about to soar. I'm not going to be in on the soaring price.
I know everyone's Phil drafts a guy and we're all like, oh,
keep in mind one thing. Keep in mind one thing. I'll say
these early drafts, Phil's just throwing us off. He's like, these guys are all going to draft Will Smith now. Stupid people.
That is $1,000 NFBC draft champions league. So you can imagine the closer prices in that. I will give you that caveat. Just to defend that price a little bit.
Well, yeah, and that's why closer prices, by the way, are skyrocketing. Anyway, I had one league where I was thankful to get Ken Giles as my closer too. Like, that's how bad it is right now. Brian, you want to expand on Will Smith at all?
I like playing this little game because I totally agree that he's overrated and the skills are not there compared to the other more elite closers. Obviously, we're still talking about getting saves here. So are you guys taking Jordan Romano, Gallegos, Mark Melanson? Are you all taking them over Will Smith?
I think the real question is, do you think it's worth drafting these guys in the fourth?
Right. I mean,
it's usually not the fourth, everyone, fifth, sixth, whatever. Are you comfortable taking a guy like that more? Or would you rather take right now, before the jobs are thrown out there, a legitimate player and taking like a David Bednar or something later, like, or a Barlow, Scott Barlow? Like, do you think that these guys are valuable enough to take them that early? Because usually there's the big run on that for sure tier that you kind of named them all. And after that, there's a little bit of a dip. And then you can grab some of these other secondary guys that we think have a job, like Bednar and Barlow and those type of guys. Do you think that a pitcher like Will Smith is worth that much more, where it's worth passing up on a possible SP2 or a valuable middle infield or something like that? I think that's the question.
Yeah, it doesn't have to necessarily be another closer. But yeah, I do agree with you. The skills are shaky. The Braves have a solid bullpen. There's some interesting arms there, especially what they did in the postseason. So, yeah, I can't disagree.
Pete, yeah, I know you don't like the closing situation down there in Miami. You talk about it all the time. What do you think of Will Smith? Would you like Will Smith to be the closer of the Marlins?
Oh, boy, we've got enough of them. Enough of those walk the bases loaded kind of crew. I mean, let's get Bass Mania out there. But Will Smith, for me, when I was scrolling down the ADPs, it blew my mind how high he was. I thought it was the catcher. I was like, oh, okay, he's going around about six. Oh, no, it's the closer going in that range. Absolutely.
Dylan Floro is going around like Pablo Lopez right now.
Wild as well. No one take Floro because the Marlins have yet to address the bullpen and Floro would not be closing out games. So I can tell you that right now that won't be happening. But Will Smith, not a chance. Way too steep. I'm going nowhere near that in the fourth. I want a legit player, to coin your phrase, Matt. Not a chance of Will Smith. I follow a lot of guys on Braves Twitter, and they were losing their minds about Will Smith all year long until the postseason. For me, that does not fill me with any confidence for a fourth round pick. Not a chance.
All right, and to close out the show, we're going to go around real quick, talk about our favorite late round targets in the NL East. Anyone that you particularly like? Let's just stick with you, Pete. What is your favorite late round target? Is it a Marlin?
Of course it's a Marlin, and it's another arm of the Marlins for sure. And there's so many of them. I've already mentioned, I mean, Edward Cabrera, he's free. I mean, there's so many free Marlins. Gerrit Cooper was free, but the one that's the most free, he's that far down. Max Meyer, get yourselves having a look at Max Meyer. For me, there is a legitimate chance that Max Meyer, the moment the plan is AAA for him, I believe that's the case to start in AAA. But there's a legitimate case if the Marlins do move some pieces around that Max could crack the rotation early doors. Who knows what happens with Lozardo? Who knows what happens with Pablo Shoulder? Who knows what happens with Sixto? Who knows what happens with Eliezer's hamstring or any other ailment? There's a real legitimate chance that, and he was sensational in AA last year, Max Meyer. He is looking major league ready. If that third pitch really comes on, there was like ace potential knocking around with Max Meyer. Absolutely sensational dude. Absolutely love him. He's free now. He's free. But if the playing time opens up by either some moves or some injuries, very, very intriguing for me.
I mean, I can't completely get on board because I can't. I want to, before I invest, I just want to see what the Marlins are doing. It usually late in DCs, I'll either draft innings I'm sure of, or I like to pepper in a bunch of relievers, even middle relievers that I think will go out there and at least do some damage. So that's just nothing against him. Just the Marlins have so many good arms. I can't be comfortable drafting a guy like that this year. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You obviously being the Marlins expert. I love Max Meyer from a dynasty standpoint. Absolutely love him. He's one of the best pitching prospects in the game. Loved him coming out of the draft, but I don't know. I don't see him being in the rotation this year. Could be totally wrong. I think his shot may come in the bullpen, but it depends on where the injuries are. Obviously, a lot of, there's some injury risk in that rotation, so he could get a shot, but also I just wonder if they're going to rush him or not. And I don't see why they would rush him. I think you're right though. He probably starts in AAA, but he's got to show a third pitch. That he threw the changeup some last year in the minors, but it wasn't enough and it wasn't effective enough. He's got to develop that. We know the slider's elite. The fastball was okay. The data on the fastball was all right last year, but he's got to develop the changeup to be an effective major league starter, in my opinion. So that'll be the key. And I think he can do it. Don't get me wrong. I think he can. I think Meyer's an elite talent, but I'm not sure this year's the year for him.
Brian, in best ball and drafting holds, how do you feel about drafting rookies like this, of this particular caliber and length away from the majors? How do you like taking shots on them late? Would you rather take innings, or do you take pepper shots on guys like this that you think could come up? I just drafted Matthew Liberatore in a DC at the very, very end.
Well, I condone that one.
What?
I condone that name anyway.
Yeah, well, I think he has a better than zero chance of coming up pretty soon. But just what's your philosophy on that? And then Meyer, and then hit us with your underrated target.
He's a Cardinal, so that's why I condone that one. But with Meyer, yeah, no, I'm not. I don't do that, to answer your question. So best ball, draft and hold. I don't want to draft anybody who is just a prospect that may be really limited on innings. Now, he is going over the last few weeks, 507 is Meyer. But even at that price, and I know we throw the word free around, there are, I don't want to use the word plenty, but there's lots of pitchers still for me, literally even going after that, that I'm getting 160 innings out of. You know, you can go and look for yourself to see who those people are. They're not fantastic, I'll tell you that. But, you know, it's a game of volume when it comes to best balls and draft and holds. And again, not everybody's playing that format. So, I mean, if you're doing a main event or something, and maybe you're hearing some good things about Meyer's chances or something like that, I don't know if he ever makes it into being drafted in a, you know, a fab type league. But yeah, I do not draft guys like that in draft and holds. But I trust Pete and I trust Chris as far as the minor league analysis there. I'm sure he'll be great eventually, but nah, it's not somebody that I would draft this year.
Brian doesn't want Max Meyer. He's too busy drafting Cole Irvin and Jordan Lyles.
No comment.
All right. Who's your favorite late round target in the NL East, Brian?
Cesar Hernandez. Now, I'll tell you this, he's going 350. So I was like, is that too high, or, you know, is that too low of a pick? Am I cheating here? But I'm telling you, and I think that number is going to rise a little bit. You know, the Nationals gave him $4 million. The Nationals are not any good. I think he's going to hit towards the top of the lineup. Roster Resource has him hitting second, to take that for what it's worth. I don't know how many games he plays, but for the last four full-ish seasons, including, of course, the COVID season, he's played 161, 161, 58 in the COVID season, 149 last year. Apparently, he hit 21 home runs last year. I don't know how that happened. But
stop stealing bases, so he decided to just put all that speed power into his arms.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, here's the thing. I know we don't care about war and defense in fantasy, but he's a wizard defensively. He hasn't had a season below 1.7 war for the last 7 years. He's usually over a two war player. He's going to play, and he's probably going to hit at the top of a crap lineup well, I don't want to say crap lineup. You got Juan Soto, maybe the best hitter in baseball, and Josh Bell hitting behind him there. So yeah, I don't know. I think his price is probably going to shoot up, but he is going around 350 over the last two or three weeks here. So yeah, Cesar Hernandez for me.
Why bat second in the Nationals lineup when you can bat leadoff? It's my guy. My late round target is Lane Thomas. I love this guy as far as value goes. I mean, he's, again, you said the lineup's bad after Josh Bell. If you have Lane Thomas is hitting in front of Cesar Hernandez, Juan Soto, and Josh Bell, there's plenty of guys that can hit him in. Granted, he had a 235 batting average, but I expect him to do a little better than that. In 2019, when he came up with the Cardinals, he kind of showed off a little bit at a 9% walk rate, 18% strikeout rate. And I think he improved a little as he had more playing time with the Nationals when he finally got traded over there. Steamer has him for 16 home runs, 11 stolen bases, and 476 plate appearances. I think he can get even more than that. So, yeah, for someone that you can get so dramatically late in drafts, my death by a thousand paper cuts approach, I love to get my stolen bases here and there and not take a zero in power. This is a perfect guy. So, yeah, you're going to have a double-digit walk rate, double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases leading off for our major league team with one of the best hitters a couple spots behind you. Yeah, sure. So yeah, Lane Thomas, I absolutely love him because that's, where's he going right now?
240.
Yeah. For me, that's fantastic because everyone likes to load up on outfielders. And I know that seems a little bit early, but again, the people going around there, there's not too many places late you can grab that speed, which is why everyone's like desperate to grab Miles Straw early. Like, I'll pass there, even though that's fine. And give me guys like this late. Give me Andrew Benintendi. Give me Lane Thomas. Give me those guys.
Yeah, I can argue with you. I think it's going to be really interesting. I do wonder, because Lane Thomas hasn't played a full season necessarily yet and hasn't done it for a whole year, if he slumps a little bit, I worry a little bit about, I don't want to throw the name like Victor Robles out there, but somebody like that maybe taking his spot. So
I'm not really worried.
You're not worried about that?
No. I mean, Yadiel Hernandez is out there too. I mean, just saying, if you want to take a shot on someone that could give you this kind of, who's leading off with this kind of skill, I would think he's in the best position to not worry about losing his job. I'm just saying, you can't, that's for anyone of his ilk, that he's not cemented in the lineup, but I can't imagine a better spot for him is, I guess, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I'm not really afraid.
These guys who are playing a lot on bad teams, that's always a nice edge, I think. Like, we're talking about Cesar Hernandez, Lane Thomas, so yeah.
Yeah, that's why I like Josh Rojas on the Diamondbacks. He's actually going around this thing, too. He's also, like, second, third in outfield. He's leading off for the Diamondbacks. Are they great? Not really, but he's going to lead off every day, and that's pretty cool. And that brings us to the end of the show. Lane Thomas, does anyone want to rip him? Am I an idiot? Am I cheating because he's going at 240?
Definitely not ripping him. Not a chance. No. I liked what I saw last year when he came up and got a chance with the Nats. It was leading off. Lots alike. Like you said, Soto's hidden behind him a couple of spots. He'll get his counted stats. All good. Lane Thomas, no problem. Cesar Hernandez, too. Where did that power come from? You're right, Brian. I'm absolutely very shocked. Weird.
He sold all average for power.
Yeah, I guess so. Max power. But yeah, both those picks, I mean, interesting, deep, deep picks for sure.
All right, to end the show, I'm going to go around, explain, remind everyone who you are, where they can find you, what kind of work you do, and tell us who's winning the division, how many teams from the division are making the playoffs, assuming they don't do anything weird in the collective bargaining agreement as far as the playoffs, which they probably will. Well, let's assume there's two wild cards and a division winner. Pete, starting with you. Tell everyone where they can chase you down. Tell them about your great podcast. Who's winning the division? Who's making the playoffs?
Yeah, so I'm mainly a Twitter guy. So it's at Miami Marlins _. Don't forget that, the _UK. So Miami Marlins _UK. Podcast, if you like your pods, there's three of them. Fish Across the Pond, Marlins UK Vibes, Locked On Marlins. That's me in the new gig hosting that one. And as well, Roto Brits, which is starting again very, very soon. Myself and Ryan Owen, UK Fantasy Baseball Flavor. So three pods. Winning the division, it's so tough. I think the Braves get the hangover, and I think you should point to the Mets. So I'm going to point to the Mets and just expect the Mets to blow it up. Who gets in? I think that three teams, when they expand it, will get through this year because I think it will be expanded. I think the Marlins make this postseason, but if it doesn't, Mets will win it, and Braves in second. That's if structure as is now.
All right, Chris.
All right, yeah. My name is Chris Clegg. You can find me on Twitter at Roto Clegg. All my work at Fantrax and Fantrax Toolshed podcast with Eric Cross. I hate to even say it, but I really think the Mets won the division. They've just done too much. And God, I don't know. Maybe the Mets are going to Mets like they always do, but there's the most talent on that team.
We're making an extraordinary amount of normal decisions lately. You got to set the bar low. Yeah. But I mean, every day I wake up and we haven't done anything crazy. It's quite a feeling.
It's always a positive.
Zero days. It's our last mistake is always the sign.
Yeah, I think the Braves get in the wild card, but hey, flags fly forever, so I'll take it. Even if the Mets win the division, I will be okay because the Braves won the World Series this year.
Brian, remind everyone where they could find you.
Right there in the Twitter handle at Brian J. Seymour. Just a player, just a high stakes fantasy baseball player. That's really all that I do. And obviously this podcast. So that as well. But yeah, the division, the Mets aren't going to win the division.
Moving on to the Mets.
How are the Mets ever? Jacob DeGrom will be on the IL probably in April. this whole thing's going to fall apart. You're going to have like angry newly signed free agents and Mark Canha and Eduardo Escobar getting benched for other guys, and everybody's getting the rug pulled out from under them in weird playing time situations, and it is not going to be good. It's going to be a complete just dumpster fire. I do think we're looking at
you ever see that video? Any of you guys see the video of Mark Canha when he was first promoted to the major leagues? Look it up on YouTube or Twitter if you can. He, if you ever see the movie Bull Durham, where Kevin Costner's given all the cliches that you have to give, he does nothing. Like after the game, the reporters are asking Canha questions about his MLB debut, and he's quoting the movie verbatim with a straight face and then walks away. It is so good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Look it up if you're a fan of that movie. Go ahead, Brian.
Check that out. But yeah, I think we're looking at a Braves-Phillies fight for the division here. I think the Phillies, man, Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, my God, do you have a better 1-2 punch in the majors right now? Maybe, yes, but I love that one. Yeah, you think? Okay.
Well, they're not 1-2. There's a lot of good ones out there.
But they're Amid, Scherzer.
If we say there's not, then we're going to get a lot of angry Twitter people. There's lots of them. We respect them all, everyone.
Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff too. But yeah, I'm interested by the Phillies, but I could see the Braves pulling this out again. I think it's going to be a dogfight between those two. I think the Marlins and the Mets will have similar records. That's something I'll give you. I don't know what that will be, but I think they'll be around each other.
Yeah. I think the Phillies could be dangerous. I think that, they're not done obviously in free agency. I would hope that they're not going to make a trade for a closer. I would think Corey Knebel shouldn't be the end game. If he is, it's not the worst thing, but there's some question marks there as far as if he can go full season. So yeah, I'd like them to not like them to, I'd hate them to do anything else, but yeah, I think they got to sure something up there. They let McCutchen go. They still have some work to do in the outfield, which I think they no doubt will. Still not believing in Ranger. I don't like their 3-4-5. I didn't like what Gibson really looked like down the stretch. So for me to take them entirely seriously, I need to see more, which I think they will be handling. So, yeah, I think that they'll be in there pretty strong. I will take the Mets to win the division, not biasly. I think I like our crew. Again, we have work to do. I'm projecting for the Phillies. Carrasco, I'm not even considering a part of the team. No offense, Carlos. I need to see more as far as health. We need another stable arm for sure. We've got to get a left-handed reliever. There's, everyone has stuff to do. So, yeah, I think it'll be tight. I think Braves, Phillies, Mets could all make the playoffs. I think that the Marlins made some very under-the-radar moves, especially on offense. Evesel Garcia, if a couple of their guys take a step forward, Jesus Chances, I love, they could be really dangerous if their pitching can stay healthy, if they grab an actual closer. So, yeah. I mean, everyone but the Nationals, who I think are a lock to have a very bad record. It's going to be a good division. So, yeah, I think up to three teams make it to the playoffs in this one. It's a good division. Mm-hmm. So That's it for the Turn 2 podcast. Hopefully everyone enjoyed this. Peter, Chris, thank you for joining us on the show. I really appreciate having you on. And we'll be back next week with the National League Central when we got Jenny Butler coming on the show to represent the Reds. And over from the Rates and Barrels podcast representing the Brewers, we have the smoothest voice in fantasy baseball, and Derek Van Riper coming on the show. So thank you for listening again to the Turn 2 podcast. We'll be back next week. See everybody.